Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, you guys. This is Thursday, February 17th, one day after my birthday. Yes, happy birthday to me. If you would have been on Facebook, you would have seen me on there, proud and happy to be 47. Yes, I said 47 years old. God has blessed me, too. Okay, you guys, tonight I didn't do my homework. I'm going to tell you why I say that. I didn't get a guest for tonight, even though that was one thing I said I promised you guys I was going to do for the month of February, but I'm going to work on getting one next week, okay? So, tonight I was wondering, what took place during my birth year? As you know, it was 1964. So, what I did was I did a little research, and I found some very interesting things out. And I want to take some time and let you guys hear a couple of things. I'm trying to avoid reading if I can, because sometimes I sound like I'm reading too much, and I don't mean to. Hold on. Sorry. You know how your music seems like it won't stop? No, I'm having that problem tonight. Okay. So what we're going to do, we're going to listen and talk about some things that happened in the year of 1964, okay? Let's see here. Okay, I'm going to name a couple of things that took place in 1964 by the date, and then I'm going to let it explain itself. Now, first thing happened, June 1964. I was born in February, so this had to be, I was only like 5 months old when this happened. It says the Council of Federated Organization launches Freedom Summer to register black voters in Mississippi. Now, what I've learned is Mississippi was one of those states that relentlessly did not, excuse me, I'm sorry, just one second here. I know what I did. There we go. Now, okay. What happened was Mississippi was one of those states that really, literally fought against African American voting. So, I want to start out with this. So the Freedom Summer was what it was called. Also known as Mississippi Summer Project, was a campaign in the United States launched in June 1964 to attempt to register as many African-American voters as possible. Okay? Now, like I said, I'm trying to avoid myself from reading, but sometimes I have to in order to see where I'm at. Okay. It says, African-American voters, impossible. Mississippi, which up to that time had almost totally excluded black voters. The project was organized by the Council of Federated Organizations, a coalition of four established civil rights organizations, the National Association for Advance of Colored People, which we know as NAACP, the Congress of Racial Equality, which is CORE, and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, okay, which that was playing the leading role in this whole project, okay? It says Freedom Summer was possible because of the years of early work by numerous African Americans who lived locally in Mississippi. By 1964, students and others had begun the process of integrating public accommodations, registering to vote, and the above all, organizing a network of local leadership. Well, over 1,000 out-of-state volunteers participated in Freedom Summer alongside thousands of black Mississippians. Most of the volunteers were young, most of them from the North, most of them were white, and many were Jewish. 2 one-week orientation sessions for volunteers were held at Western College for Women in Oxford, Ohio, now part of Miami University, from June 14th to June 27th. Organizers focused on Mississippi because it had the lowest percentage of African American registered to vote in the country. Winrod said that it was because it was the hardest, but obviously it was the lowest percentage rate of African Americans to vote. Okay. Then it says right here, it says in the country, this is in the country, okay. In 1962, only 6.7% of eligible black voters were registered. White officials in the South systematically kept African Americans from being able to vote by charging them expensive poll tax, forcing them to take excessively difficult literacy tests, making the application process inconvenient, harassing would-be voters economically, as by denying crop loans and carrying out arson, battery, and lynching. Isn't that amazing? And see, this is what just gets me about our children of today who don't want to sit still in school, who wants to give everybody a hard time. When I think about all these people that went through so much so that we could be able to vote to this day. Now, excuse me. Now, what I want to do is I'm going to play an excerpt from YouTube. And the guy's name is Mark Williamson. I think that's how I said his name, but I'm going to let you guys listen to it, okay?
I'm Marco Williams, Marco, director of Freedom Summer.
In 1960, Mississippi had the lowest percentage of black citizens registered to vote of any state in the country, despite the fact that in many of the counties, blacks constituted a majority of the population. With less than 7% of blacks registered to vote, voter registration became the priority.
I don't know that this will be easy for an audience. I know that race is not something that people like to talk about, much less like to think about, but I'm hoping that people will willingly engage self-reflection on what it means to be an American in a racially diverse America.
A reputed Ku Klux Klansman says he's not guilty for the 1964 slaying of 3 civil rights workers in Mississippi.
I'm lucky, perhaps, because I have a built-in hook to my story. And that is what brings me to this town at this time. There is something going on right now that gives me a lens back into history.
Mr. Killen, you've been charged with 3 counts of murder. Do you have any comment at all, sir?
This is the first time the state has sought criminal charges in this case. Victims James Cheney, Andrew Goodman, and Michael Schwerner have been registering voters.
We're in the American South, where a significant event occurred over a generation ago. We're here at the place of a murder story. In some ways, with a murder mystery, a murder trial, but that's really just a way to kind of look more deeply at a set of issues that have confounded Americans for over 200 years. And that set of issues is race and race relations.
The 3 murdered civil rights workers were part of the 1964 Freedom Summer Project, in which hundreds of volunteers, many of them white college students from the North, went to Mississippi to work to end the disenfranchisement of black Americans in the state.
When I decided to make this film, I thought that I was going to be able to use the day that these 3 guys went missing to tell the story of the efforts of black civil rights workers and leaders, the grassroots movement of Mississippi,
and tell that story. But the minute you start talking about the white kids who went down to Mississippi, the minute you start talking about the white guys who get killed in Mississippi, that becomes the story. I try to bury the lead, as they say in journalist terms. I try to make the disappearance of the three guys the middle of the story, not the most significant moment. But I actually got caught in the same trap. It's now the tease. It opens the story. And in fact, it is the story. That's why America cared about this moment. So it became much more challenging for me to find a way to still make sure that people knew that there are many whites who were committed to the cause. At that moment in our history, it was the efforts of black Americans that was making the difference. The story that I'm doing is personal to me. It's personal to me because this part of our history has helped make me who I am today. This moment in American history has allowed me to be the American that I am.
Okay. As you can see, that was an excerpt from a movie called Summer Freedom, June 1964. And like I said, I understand my year, and I think it's a blessing that I was born in 1964, and I think that's just how it was, because I kind of get the feeling of wanting to fight for things that are right. And, I mean, maybe that sounds kind of weird or really off the shoulder, but that's just my spirit. I love fighting for what's right. Let's see something. I think this might be.
It is the summer of 1964. Tensions are high, and the civil rights movement is at a turning point.
This quarter is the Freedom Summer Volunteers for upper middle class privileged white students. There were 2,300 students, and they will require to bring a lot of money for living expenses, medical bills.
Is that freedom?
Bob Moses outlined the goals of this project and spoke to a group of potential volunteers at Stanford University to expand black voter registration in the state, to organize a legally constituted Freedom Democratic Party that would challenge the white settlers of the Democratic Party, to establish freedom schools to teach reading and math to black children.
SNCC workers start preparing the young and naive volunteers for the dangers that lay ahead in Mississippi.
This is a picture
covering your head
of them practicing.
Roll up in a knot and hit the ground.
What this is.
Head as close to your knees as possible. Legs together. Because the legs sticking out can be broken with one quick step. Don't carry watches, pens, glasses, and never more than $5 to $10. No sandals. They stop you from running. A T-shirt may save you some skin if you're being dragged on your stomach. If you're caught from behind, go limp. If your friend's getting hit in the head, fall on it. Watch for cars without plates and cops without badges. Never be the last to leave a meeting. Never leave alone.
Despite the efforts of the SNCC workers, the gravity of the situation in Mississippi was still denied full respect. In the first days of training, there was a definite separation between black SNCC workers and the white volunteers. The SNCC workers already had done so much work. Why would they need these white students? We felt that with young people coming in with no knowledge of the South or Mississippi, that this would be very dangerous. And based on those and other reasons, we felt that we should not have an influx of white Northerners coming down to Mississippi. as we would say, take an elderly, and after 3 or 4 months be gone. When the dust settles, he will be left in the first 2 days of training, there was a noticeable tension between the volunteers and the staff. Then Tuesday night, we saw a movie made by CBS Reports describing how the Negro was discriminated against in Mississippi in regard to voting. Some of the film was absolutely ridiculous and ludicrous. A big, fat, really fat, and ugly white county registrar prevents Negroes from voting. Stupid, really completely irrational and dishonest views of some white Southerners, and so on. 6 of the staff members got up and walked out of the movie because it was so real to them, while we laughed because it was so completely foreign to us. If anyone had said what they did in the movie, we in the North would lock them up or dismiss them completely. But this is the way so many white Southerners think. After the movie, one of the staff told us why they had walked out, and it shook a little bit up. We were afraid the whole movement was going to fall apart.
Everything changed with the announcement that the three civil rights workers June 21st, as 300 volunteers prepared to head down to Mississippi, two core workers and one volunteer disappeared. Michael Schwerner, Andrew Goodman, James Cheney, jailed for speeding charges after investigating a church burning, were later released. What happened next was on them. I may be killed. You may be killed. The whole staff may go. James Brown. All I can say is that I'll be there too. Awesome. Something happened. The whites began to comprehend what it was like to be a Negro in 1964 in Mississippi.
Y'all know
what
my child was doing. He was crying for a soul, next to him. And he had 2 cells from New York. He had his own home and everything to have just. But they come here to help us. Did y'all know they come here to help us?
This is Miss Chase.
He died for us. We had come together because we couldn't avoid him down there. It had to be here. We came together.
Okay. So, and as I was just saying, that was Miss Cheney talking about her son and how she felt that all three of them died for us, literally. So maybe I sometimes take things, I try not to take what my people, because I say my people, have fought for us, and it's amazing that all of this went on in the year of my birth. So that's why I thought it would be so nice to bring this to you. Now, this is July 2nd, and it's President Johnson signed Civil Rights Act of 1964 into law. It says the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was a landmark piece of legislation in the United States that outlawed racial segregation in schools and public places. So I know this is exciting because I was born in a phenomenal year when all this amazing stuff was going on and this stuff that changed our whole perception of who we were and all the people who fought and died for us, not in a war, but just in the streets of the United States, in the streets of Mississippi, in the streets of Alabama. This stuff right here, this is what makes me walk up proud and what makes me hold on to what and what I try to instill in my son, and I try to instill in other children how we have so much to walk around with. I know, despite what nobody else thinks about us, we're proud. We are a proud people. We are a people of survival. So that's what makes it so, I mean, just right now I just got chills because it's amazing what we went through to get to this. And if you could see the videos, I'm playing, you can hear it, but if you could see the videos, it will amaze you. Okay. It says, the Civil Rights of 1964, July 2nd, was a landmark piece of legislation in the United States that outlawed racial segregation in schools, public places, and employment. Conceived to help African Americans, the bill was amended prior to passage to protect women and explicitly included white people for the first time. It also created Equal Opportunity Commission, okay? It says, in order to circumvent limitations on congressional power to enforce equal protection clause imposed by the Supreme Court in the civil rights cases, the law was passed under the Commerce Clause, which had been interpreted by the courts as a broad grant of congressional power. Once the act was implemented, its effects were far-reaching and had tremendous long-term impact on the whole country. It prohibited discrimination in public facilities, in government, and in employment. Invalidating the Jim Crow laws of the southern U.S., it became illegal to compel segregation of the races in school, housing, or hiring. Powers were given to enforce the bill were initially weak, but were supplemented during the later years. And President Lyndon B. Johnson signed it.
Let us lay aside irrelevant differences and make our nation whole. Let us hasten that day when our unmeasured strength and our unbounded spirit will be free to do the great works ordained for this nation by the just and wise God, who is the Father of us all.
He's actually signing the bill. Well,
amazing.
That's why I'm so happy and excited. The year I was born in.
Over his mouth.
It says the next group we see tens of the African American leaders, including Martin Luther King Jr., A. Philip Randolph, and Whitney M. Bell Jr.
Come on. Come on.
It says in a nationally televised address on June 6, 1963, President John F. Kennedy urged the nation to take action toward guaranteeing equal treatment of every American, regardless of race. Soon after Kennedy proposed, the Congress considered civil rights legislation that would address voting rights, public accommodation, school desegregation, non-discrimination, and federally assisted programs, and more. So this happened prior to, this is President John F. Kennedy, this happened prior to 1964. This happened in 1963, okay, when he made this proposal. Okay, let's see what else happened during that year of my birthday. Okay, the next one was August the 24th, and it says, Fannie Lou Hamer speaks at 1964 Democratic National Convention. All of this is on account we are to register to become first-class citizens. And if the Freedom Democratic Party is not seated now, I question America. Is this America the land of the free and the home of the brave? Okay. It says, well, we have to sleep with our telephones off the hook because our lives be threatened daily because we want to live as decent human beings in America. And this is what she asks. So let's see. This next person who's going to be speaking, his name is Congressman John Lewis.
The civil rights struggle changed the lives of thousands of people. They risked all they had, jobs, possessions, and their lives. Congressman John Lewis was one of the leaders of the movement.
Senator Hamer was beaten. She was jailed. She was harassed. But she never gave up.
Fannie Lou Hamer was one of the most influential leaders of the civil rights movement, regardless of color or background.
She stood up to governors. Stood up to police officials. She stood up to President Lyndon Johnson, and she testified before the Democratic Convention in 1964.
If survival is the name of the game, survive. One can get tired of turning the other cheek.
With her words, her ability to speak, her ability to frame, her ability to organize and tell people to stand up, that she moved not only the state of Mississippi, but she moved an entire nation.
Fannie Lou Hamer.
Awesome. See, women, African-American women, young ladies, this one lady did this, okay? So listen, I guess, like I said, it's so much more that we have to be so proud of, and we don't even grasp the concept of where we came from. And you know what? I know some people are tired of hearing, you know, oh, Black History Month, oh, we got to listen to this all for a whole month. I'm so glad it's a short month. You guys, let me tell you something. Never forget where you came from. Never forget where you came from. And some people I've even
kids or the younger generation say, well, it didn't happen to me. It happened to some other people. No, it happened in your family because we were all as one. Back in the day, we were all as one. We didn't take, you know, there wasn't a certain class of people. We all were treated the same exact way. No matter where we went, how we went, we were all treated. No matter how much more money you had than your neighbor, you were still treated in the eyes of the ignorant, because I don't want to call them by race. In the eyes of the ignorant, you were the same exact thing. No matter how many degrees you had, no matter how many degrees your mom had, no matter what you did, what part of society you come from, you were treated exactly the same way. And you have to understand that. You really and truly have to understand that. Okay, let's see.
Tamer was born October 17, 1917, in Montgomery County, Mississippi, one of the poorest areas of the nation for blacks. Like most Delta blacks, Tamer and other family members were sharecroppers. The sharecropping system was devised to replace slavery as a source of cheap labor. Sharecropping was a system under which poor tenant farmers were each assigned a piece of plantation land to farm. Her family was paid $50 by plantation owners every time they produced a future field hand. The tenant was given a house, food, seed, fertilizer, and farm equipment on credit from the plantation owner's company store. At harvest time, the landowner was due half the crops and the sharecropper the other half. The sharecropper had to pay for his supplies out of his earnings. But most times, the amount owed by the sharecropper was more than his crops were worth, according to the plantation owner. This kept sharecroppers in continuous debt to the landowner, and this meant poverty. Sharecroppers who tried to escape from this slavery by moving to another farm had their personal property confiscated as payment for debt or were killed. Through the hard work of both of her parents and the 20 children, the Hamers grinded their way out of the cycle. Her father was able to rent land and purchase his own animals and equipment. Their new prosperity ended abruptly. A white man poisoned the feed and killed their stock. The family had to return back to sharecropping. Fannie Lou Hamer's introduction into the political process began in August of 1962. Motivated by one of her friends, Hamer attended a rally held by the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee for Voter Registration. At 45 years old, Hamer made the decision to stand up against political racism.
If there is anything that people, and especially young people, can learn from this grave, they can raise a soul. It should be to be consistent, to be persistent, and to keep in mind that the struggle that we are involved in is not one that lasts for one day, or one week, or one month, or one year, but it is a struggle of a lifetime.
On the day of registration, Tamer was met by the Mississippi Literacy Test. Blacks had to copy and interpret a section of the Mississippi State Constitution to the satisfaction of the county examiner. Hamer failed the first time. On one of her frequent trips back to attempt to register, Hamer told the clerk he would see her every 30 days for the rest of her life until she passed the voting test. In January of 1963, Tamer passed the test and won the right to vote. Following her victory, hundreds of other blacks won the right to vote. due to her determination to vote, Tamer, her husband, and daughter were evicted from their plantation home. The landowner kept their property, claiming they owed him money. That night, a white hate group came to the home and shot it up. They did the same thing to the home of another person active in registering black voters. In a separate incident, two female students from Jackson State University were wounded. This kind of harassment was common for blacks or anyone else who worked to improve the horrible living conditions in the Mississippi Delta. Many times, Tamer almost lost her life. She knew she could be killed at any moment. One of the methods she used to cope with the constant danger was by singing spirituals at meetings and during marches. Her comrades were re-energized by her gift and welcomed her songs.
I'm never sure anymore when I leave home whether I'll get back or not. Sometimes it seems like to tell the truth today is to run the risk of being killed. But if I fall, I'll fall 5 feet 4 inches forward in the fight for freedom. I'm not backing off that, and no one will have to cover the ground I walk as far as freedom is concerned.
Hundreds died pursuing equality. Samuel Young Jr. was a student civil rights worker shot and killed in a dispute over a whites-only restroom in 1966. This is an era of social revolution. In such revolutions, individuals sacrifice their lives. Samuel Young Sr. Tamer also spoke out about another issue.
One of the greatest obstacles to black progress at this time is disunity among blacks themselves. At certain intervals, blacks are kicking blacks in the back. While the white man is killing us, some of the same things are happening in the tavern and nightclubs among ourselves.
Her strong interest in the fight for civil rights motivated her to apply for a job as a field secretary for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. After she was hired, one of her major responsibilities in the new position was to travel to the cotton field and encourage black workers to register to vote.
One day, I think historians would pick up their pens and they would have to write that this woman, this one brave soul who had been a timekeeper on a plantation in the Delta, Mississippi, that with her word, her ability to speak, her ability to frame, her ability to organize and tell people to stand up, that she moved not only the state of Mississippi, but she moved an entire nation, that she led us in the fight for the right to vote.
So, awesome lady. This is not the first time I've heard of her, but I didn't realize the extent of what she did. I had no idea she did all this.
Her work took her outside of Mississippi. Less than 9 months after Tamer was hired, she and other members of the Southern Christian Leadership Council and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee were returning by bus from a voter education workshop in Charleston, South Carolina. They were arrested for entering the white side of the terminal and held in jail. White supervisors told a group of black police officers to beat them. At first, the black officers refused. But when they were told they would be fired, they reluctantly did it. Tamer suffered kidney damage and permanently injured her left eye from a blood clot. From her jail cell, Tamer heard white officers plan to murder them. The plan was to let them out of jail and then kill them for trying to escape.
They offered to let us go one night, but I knew it was just so they could kill us and say we was trying to escape. I told them they'd have to kill me in my cell. I had two encounters with Fannie Lou Hamer. One was on the telephone and one was in person. At the time, I was an employee of the Voter Education Project, which was directed by the late Wiley E. Branton. Ms. Hamer and Annelle Ponder, a young civil rights worker, had been taken off of a bus and put in a jail in Mississippi and beaten. And Mr. Branton had been instrumental in getting them released from jail. No doubt he was instrumental in saving their lives, actually. But as soon as they had been released from the jail, Mrs. Hamer called the Voter Education Project in Atlanta. We were at 5 Fife Street at the time. And she was still emotionally overwrought from her experience. And she gave us the account of exactly what had happened to her in that jail. And I'm sure that story has been told many times, how two black men had been forced to take sticks and beat her and Annelle. And actually, it injured her badly because she was a polio victim as a child. And she walked with a limp, and they had beaten her all over her legs. And I remember the most heartrending thing that she said to me over the phone was, "They beat me, and they beat me till they couldn't beat me no more." And it hurt her so badly that these two black men had to perform this. But Fannie Lou Hamer was a person who was not afraid to die, even though she underwent some horrendous experience.
Even though Hamer knew many whites hated black people, she refused to hate them.
"It wouldn't solve any problem for me to hate whites just because they hate me."
After movement representatives were notified about what had happened, they contacted the Justice Department. Inquiries by the Justice Department into the circumstances surrounding the arrest led to them being freed after 3 days in jail. After the passage of the 1964 Public Accommodations Law, making it illegal to discriminate against blacks in public places, the momentum grew stronger for the right to vote in Mississippi. Hamer and other leaders in the movement knew that many of the states, towns, and counties had mostly black populations. Winning the right to vote meant electing many black officials who could help the race improve their standard of living. The push for voting rights in Mississippi also drew the attention of thousands of white student volunteers throughout the nation, and they came to help black people in their efforts to register. In August of 1964, two white volunteers from the North and a young black from Mississippi were murdered in Neshoba County, Mississippi. In the spring of 1964, Hamer and other people in Mississippi formed the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party after they were barred from Democratic precinct meetings. After Hamer attended a meeting, her husband was fired from his job the next day. Hamer was elected vice chair of the party and was fearless in speaking publicly about black and white relations.
"In my opinion, race relations have not improved. Some people, it seems, will never change. One of the best examples of that is the recent killing of Miss Jo Essa Collier by three white men following her graduation exercise in Drew, Mississippi. Drew has a long history of mobbing and killing, and the same thing is still happening today. At one time in Mississippi, whites used to kill without bothering to explain. But at this point, in such cases, explanations are given."
In 1964, the MFDP, made up of black and white delegates, went to Atlantic City to attend the Democratic National Convention. They presented their evidence that the white delegation had been selected in a fraudulent method. Hamer's group asked the Convention Credentials Committee to refuse to seat the Democratic delegates and instead recognize the MFDP as a representative from Mississippi. President Lyndon Johnson was unopposed for the Democratic nomination and held a commanding lead over Republican challenger Barry Goldwater. Johnson made careful plans to use this opportunity for national television coverage to enhance his image in the Democratic Party. The MFDP could ruin this. The group was led by famous civil rights attorney Joseph Rao. Martin Luther King Jr. was one of the people who testified before the Convention's Credentials Committee, but it was Hamer who shook the conscience of the nation with her moving testimony about the terrible economic conditions blacks were pinned under. Her shocking comments of how she and others were badly beaten for attempting to exercise their legal rights to vote drew national attention.
It is the very terror that these people are living through that is the reason that Negroes aren't voting, that they're kept out of the Democratic Party by the terror of the regular party. And what I want the Credentials Committee to hear is the terror which the regular party uses on the people of Mississippi, which is what Reverend King was explaining, which is what Aaron Henry was explaining, and which is what the next witness will explain, Mrs. Fannie Lou Hamer.
Okay. Very interesting. Man, I had no idea this was going on.
Mr. Chairman, and to the Credentials Committee, my name is Mrs. Fannie Lou Hamer, and I live at 626 East Lafayette Street, Louisville, Mississippi, Sunflower County, the home of Senator James O. Eastman and Senator Spinney. If the Freedom Democratic Party is not seated now, I question America. Is this America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, where we have to speak with our telephones off of the hook because our lives be spread daily, because we want to live as decent human beings in America?
When the MFDP appeal was rejected, Hamer and other members vowed to keep fighting. During this period, Hamer's political experience grew. She became acutely aware that the human crisis faced by blacks in her state was also a plague throughout the nation. Johnson won the Democratic nomination as the Vietnam War grew. After the Atlantic City Convention, Hamer and the MFDP developed strategies to take their case to the United States Congress. Since blacks in Mississippi were prevented from nominating and voting for their own candidates, the MFDP conducted its own election. Their ballot listed the white incumbent and the MFDP opponent. Hamer was on the ballot representing the 2nd District. She received 33,000 votes against 49 for the incumbent. In September of 1965, 15,000 pages of evidence were presented to the Congressional Subcommittee on Elections when they heard their case. It proved that 40% of Mississippi's people were being denied voting rights guaranteed by the Constitution.
Racial progress. Almost 100 years ago during Reconstruction, John Lynch placed the same kind of challenge before the House of Representatives. He was a black man from Mississippi, and he succeeded with Yankee white help. But we failed 100 years later with native white Mississippi help and Yankee opposition. So you see, this is not Mississippi's problem. It is America's problem.
It's rare. It's rare these days to see people with that kind of courage. I really don't know where she gets this courage that she had, but it was obvious that it was, and everybody sort of saw it in her. When she would speak and talk, it would rage. You know, that she knew what she was talking about. She was dead right in what she was saying. Some may not necessarily agree, but I think they had to respect it because she was speaking from the heart. She did it in such a dramatic way, I should say, that was unique, although simple.
Although they met defeat for the second time, the MFDP's pressure was a major factor in forcing Congress to pass the 1965 Voting Rights Act. 3 years later, at the Chicago Democratic Convention, Hamer and a biracial delegation, now named the Mississippi Loyalist Democrats, stood up one more time and challenged political exclusion. This time, they succeeded in replacing the old establishment. Hamer was elected committee woman for the Mississippi Democratic National Committee and served 3 years.
The lot of blacks in the South has not improved very much in any particular area. The areas which I consider most important for changes to be made are in the areas of political and economic power. Black people must register and vote.
As Hamer's political participation increased, she became more knowledgeable of the depth of America's racial problems. By 1968, she saw that this was not a battle solely for black rights, but a war for human rights. This same year, Hamer worked closely with Dr. King to help him organize the Poor People's Campaign. His strategy was to build a multiracial coalition of poor people to demand economic parity.
We have to realize just how grave the problem is in the United States today.
After Dr. King's assassination in April of 1968, the civil rights movement's momentum slowed. Hamer, like many of the other influential people who had risen to be national figures, returned home. In Mississippi, Hamer continued to aid poor blacks living in Ruleville and Sunflower County. She also led the fight that brought the Head Start program for low-income children to her state. Her national reputation in civil rights presented her the opportunity to travel to Africa and Europe. Despite her influence, she remained humble. Hamer also delivered jobs by bringing a garment factory to Ruleville. And she was instrumental in opening a low-cost daycare center named after her. When plantation workers found themselves without jobs after farms started using machines, Hamer formed the Freedom Farm Cooperative that grew to 680 acres. Hamer's early years were hard. She and her brothers and sisters spent long hours picking cotton on white plantation owners' farms for very little money.
Okay, and I know I went over with Fannie Lou Hamer, but I did this on purpose because I needed to hear her story just as well as I want you guys to hear her story. So for you young women out there, listen to what this lady did. Awesome. This is awesome stuff, and you know I love the word awesome because I don't know how else to say it. She was brave. She was courageous. She was beaten by
two African-American men who were forced to beat her and her friends. Okay? She rose from cotton fields up to, I mean, come on. Don't tell me. I mean, what we're not understanding is, as African-Americans in this day, they lived hard. We have no idea what living hard is about. We don't really know what being poor is about. To be honest with you, I don't know what being poor is. I'm not saying I come from a rich family. I come from a mother, a single mother, raised in a project with five girls. But this was poor because they didn't have the services like welfare and food stamps. They didn't have it back then. You know, you heard that they owned so many acres of land and they got snatched up because she went to vote or she tried to vote. You know, all this stuff happened to them. Their land as kids was stolen from them. So please, you guys, this was a strong black woman, okay? This was what you call a strong black woman, okay? I'm sorry. I can't see it any way else. I mean, I can't see it any other way. What I want to do is I want to continue this next week. If I can't get a host, I mean, excuse me, a guest, I'm not even going to worry about that because this is exciting me to another level. And understand this. Black history does not start and stop in February. Okay, you guys? Black history does not stop and start, excuse me, start and stop in February. It is all the time. Know your history. If you can't do anything else, know your history. Know where you came from. I'm not saying going around because you know all this and you're angry and you want to hate this person. Baby, don't do that. Don't waste your time. That's wasted energy. Do not hate other people. Okay? Do not hate yourself. Do not hate your own race of people. Some of us are very ashamed of being black. We wish and we teach our children that we want to be another color. Baby, God has blessed you and gave you that color for a reason. Okay? We're this race for a reason. Because we're a strong race. We have survived the most. From Egypt, Africa, all the way up to now. We have survived so much. And we still on a steady basis, steadily surviving and moving on and making it through. Let me tell each and every one of you children, I have 2 minutes left. You are here for a purpose. And only God can change that purpose for you. And he's not going to do that because he wants you here for that. So I say to you guys, pay attention in school. Get your education. Okay? Be something. Have a reason to fight for something, not each other. Not because somebody has on a better jacket than you or a better pair of shoes than you or their hair looks better than you. Guys, find other things. Use that energy to learn. Learn from your enemy. If you do nothing else, learn from your enemy, you know. Learn from those people who don't like you, okay? Give them a reason to keep talking about you because I feel like this. If somebody's talking about me, I must be very interesting. And that's how I look at it. So I say to you guys, constantly learn, 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 learn. We will continue with Fannie Lou Hamer next Thursday. Same time, same back channel. And I want to say thank you again. This is blogtalkradio.com, ChocolateLady64. And I say happy Black History Month. And I will see you guys next week. Bye-bye.